Stephen Koprinz is a partner at Feetfish Immel Heeb and Herd and writing on the Small GovCon blog, and we have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You're writing about a Defense Logistics Agency solicitation in this case, Steve. Tell me about the case and what we learned from it, from the decision by the Government Accountability Office. Thanks for being on today.
Great, and thanks for having me, Francis. Yes, this was a case called Graybar. It's a GAO case that came out on March 4th. And this is an interesting solicitation and an interesting decision, I think, for small government contractors in particular, as well as large primes. And so in this solicitation, the DLA was doing one of these best value type awards. So they're considering technical merit, past performance, and price. And that's a pretty standard trifecta of factors that an agency would consider. Under the technical factor, the DLA said we're going to consider one of the sub-factors with socioeconomic objectives, and that's essentially subcontracting goals. What's that large prime proposing to do with respect to small business subcontractors and various socioeconomic subcategories of small business? Interestingly, though, under the past performance factor, the DLA included a sub-factor regarding previous subcontracting performance. And so the DLA says, under the technical, we're going to look at your goals, what are you proposing to do here, but under past performance, we're going to look at what you did in the past. So we're going to look both at what you're proposing to do going forward and what you did going past. So Graybar is one of the large offers that submitted a proposal under this solicitation. The DLA took a look at Graybar's technical merit, said, your subcontracting goals here are outstanding. You're apparently, and this case doesn't give the details, but apparently proposed a strong, aggressive plan to subcontract to small businesses and socioeconomic subcategories of small businesses. But looking backwards, the DLA discovered that on all three of the past performance projects that Graybar had submitted, it had failed to meet the subcontracting goals that it had established on those contracts. And so the DLA downgraded Graybar on that past performance sub-factor and on the past performance factor in general. Graybar ended up getting only a satisfactory confidence rating for past performance, thought it should get a higher rating, outstanding rating as it had for its goals. So DLA eliminated Graybar from the competition. They weren't even included in the competitive range. Graybar filed a GAO protest challenging that elimination. And the GAO said, nope, DLA, you did the right thing here. The evaluators noted that there was a consistent failure to meet small business goals on those three contracts, and so the DLA was within its rights to exclude Graybar from the competitive range.
You write in this blog post, the Graybar bid protest involves an interesting juxtaposition of small business subcontracting objectives and small business subcontracting performance. Tell me what you mean by that.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting case where you actually have both things being considered. You have the large prime's goals, what they propose to do on with respect to subcontracting on this particular contract, but you also have the agency looking backwards and saying, how well did this contractor actually meet its goals? In other words, is this contractor one that we believe is going to achieve the goals that it's setting forth on this contract? And so you've got this juxtaposition of a contractor that apparently proposed an outstanding plan for subcontracting goals, presumably aggressive high levels of subcontracting to small business, and yet looking at what this contractor had done, at least on with respect to the three contracts at issue here, the three past performance contracts, hadn't been meeting those goals that it had set forth on the previous contracts.
It strikes me that what DLA was really saying, although they didn't spell it out explicitly, is tell us what you're going to do, but that's not good enough. You have to show us what you've done and let us compare your past record with what you're telling us you're going to do. Because they obviously thought that the plan, Graybar's plan, was good enough to give them an outstanding.
Yeah, I got the exact same impression reading this case. That reading between the lines, that's what DLA is thinking, that rather than just take your word for it exclusively that as to what you're proposing with respect to your subcontracting goals, we want to see what your history is of meeting the goals that you've set forth. And so in this case, that history wasn't that great, at least with respect to these three contracts, and that affected the overall evaluation.
You write, I've said it before and I'll say it again, with all due respect to the SBA's initiatives to strengthen subcontracting plan enforcement, the best way to ensure that large primes meet their subcontracting goals is for procuring agencies to do what the DLA did here. So overall, you see this as a constructive outcome for efforts for the agencies to actually meet their goals instead of just talk about it. Am I hearing you right?
Yeah, you're hearing me exactly right. I mean, and this is with respect to a lot of large businesses who are doing a great job with their subcontracting goals, but there are those that aren't. And so, you know, there's been a lot of discussion, and there's currently an SBA proposal that stems from the 2013 NDAA to try to strengthen enforcement of subcontracting plans for large businesses. But you know what? I think that what DLA did here would achieve that effect without the need, really, for any new regulations. I mean, if once large primes become aware that they're going to be competitively scored on how well they did in the past with respect to their subcontracting goals, there's a real incentive now, a dollars and cents type incentive for large firms to make sure they meet those goals.
And any agency could specify something like this in pretty much any contract as long as they lay it out up front in the solicitation. This is how we're going to grade you. They can grade you however they want to. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, the agencies have discretion under the acquisition regulations to kind of describe in a solicitation how they intend to evaluate past performance. Any agency, it's not limited to DLA, can include in the solicitation, as DLA did here, a factor or sub-factor that says past performance on subcontracting goals would be considered. That's completely legitimate, and as long as that's set forth in the solicitation, everyone knows kind of the standards on which they're going to be evaluated, then the agencies are absolutely free to do that.
I want to go back to the challenge here, and I know this isn't, or I imagine it's not your client and you weren't involved in this case, that you're observing it from the outside. So I don't expect you to speak for the client or the representation. But you write, Graybar argued in part the DLA had improperly evaluated Graybar under the past performance factor. How do you sit down with a client when a client is saying we're thinking about protesting this, we're especially on this basis, and help that client evaluate whether it really is worth the time and money involved to go through with the protest?
Yeah, that's a great question. You're right. This wasn't my case. I make a policy not to blog my own cases because of the potential for potentially disclosing confidential information, that sort of thing. I see it as a potential problem, ethical problem. But I believe, and I haven't kept track, but I've probably talked more clients out of protesting than I've filed protests, and I've filed quite a few protests. My approach is, look, I sit down and try to give the client based on what they're, and usually the client brings to the table. Sometimes I discover, but usually the client brings to the table, here's what we think went wrong. And sometimes they're gung-ho about it. You know, this is a real problem. And I have to use, you know, my knowledge of the acquisition regulations, the GAO's decisions, Court of Federal Claims decisions, those sorts of things, to give the client really a sense as to the strength of that, initial strength of that argument. And then that may be everything from, yeah, this looks like one of the stronger ones I've seen. It's no such thing as a slam dunk, but it may be, this is a really strong, you know, as far as protests go, initial protest, or it may be you got absolutely nothing here. This is, you know, the best you can do is you know, file it and hope that the case somehow breaks your way. And so I try and give the client a read on the initial outcome, you know, my initial thoughts as to the likelihood of success. And some clients, you know, choose to proceed even when I tell them the odds are low because the contract's that important to them and they want to roll the dice. And that's fine if they choose to do that, but they should do that with the full knowledge that what they're going into is a likely loss.
And that kind of fits with where I wanted to go next about your comment about we talked about a minute ago, the best way to ensure large primes meet their subcontracting goals is for procuring agencies to do what the DLA did. I wonder, too, if by doing what the DLA did and laying it out there in very clear terms, because I went back and read the decision, and it looks to me like the original solicitation was pretty clear how we're going to grade, if that might ultimately result in fewer protests if agencies are more clear up front in their solicitations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if agencies were clearer in their solicitations, there'd be a lot fewer protests. So I've done a number of protests that I think stem from confusion among contractors as to what the agency wanted. Sometimes those are untimely, they get dismissed, and I have to talk clients down from those if you're just challenging a solicitation ambiguity. But a lot of times, if the solicitation is written better, written clearer, then you're going to have contractors, offerors understanding what their obligations are and then not complaining perhaps when the outcome doesn't go their way because they read the solicitation differently than the agency did.